each service over the last month, our anniversary month, we have been telling stories about various parts and objects that have become part of the Beacon tradition. And today's story is on our multicolored chalice logo, and I invite Joan Morris to come up and tell us about it.
As most of you now know, Donna Hamilton is the designer and fabric artist who created the hangings and pulpit cloth we see each Sunday as part of our aesthetics. Donna tells me that the inspiration for our colorful logo comes from the tall brands. Sorry, my voice is not making my words proper today. Comes from the tall bronze chalice we light every Sunday, this one here, and the multi-part flame from the RE chalice of the very early days. I have discovered how that actually happened, and it's quite a complex process that they used to do every Sunday for the children, a great big flame that would happen. The rainbow colors signify the diversity within our congregation and denomination, and together they form a single flame representing the underlying unity that connects us all, and this is the chalice that you see here. Donna designed the chalice symbol in 1996 when asked by the membership committee to come up with a logo. She presented it to Beacon on the pulpit cloth, which hangs on our pulpit here every Sunday. In early 2000s, Lutina Santing, a former Beacon member and then the worship committee chair, commissioned the large banner which hangs here each Sunday and displays the explosive extension of the logo. Tina wanted something large that said Beacon Unitarian Church to be visible every Sunday. Donna's other chalice symbols grace a whole variety of items, and we enjoy seeing them on our choir t-shirts. When the choir sings, most of the choir members have a musical variation of the chalice with a music note as the flame. I happen to have one of the early renditions. Her work is also seen on stoles and wall hangings not only throughout North America, on the UUA General Assembly banner and the Canadian Unitarian Council banner, but also in England and other parts of Europe, such as Poland, Transylvania, and as far away as Australia. We are so proud to have such a celebrated artist in our congregation, and to have all of the bits and pieces that she has produced for us.
We are indeed blessed with all the talent that is in this community. I have a reading this morning to take us into our time of contemplation, stillness, meditation. It's called Waiting to Go On, and it's by the poet David White. So I invite you to settle into your comfort in your seat, and let the images in this story, this poem, flow through your mind and your heart, waiting to go on. I lay a handful of walnuts to dry by the fire, pile 6 new apples in a bowl, and wiping the cutting boards to a woody gleam, clear off the fine needles and nubby stalks that fell from the mushrooms I found this morning walking in the woods. I drop the potatoes into soft, simmering water, then lower the oven to a ticking heat and, turning to the beautiful, stark, inviting coldness of the hearth, set down in the fireplace torn paper and pine cones, kindling and logs, and kneeling, coax small flames to life. Sweeping the hearth of dust and ash, and kneeling next to the fire, just beginning to snap, I listen behind me to the slow tick of the oven expanding to a different time, another measure. Its black-heated interior braising lamb I saw raised in the fields that spread below my upstairs window. Beneath that window, resting on paper in the shadows of my desk, in the laptop's subdued pulsing glow, half-finished poems wait at the frontier between being written and being done. Beside them, a gleaming violin sits cradled in its stand. The music book open to an ancient rhythmic, hard-to-get tune. All this practice, this sharpening and attentive presence, all this daily fetching and gathering, this constant maturing and getting ready, all this slowly being heated through, brought to a simmer, being educated, knowledgeable, learning through experience, all this work to have one complete day, lived just as it should be. And all this constant testing by the world to see if we are done, ready, cooked through, ripe enough to fall, to be lifted, bitten right into and consumed ourselves. And then for everyone, all the hours of daily practice, just learning to hit the right note, the conversational note, the musical note, just right, and wanting it live with all the other notes. It must be that we are waiting for the perfect moment. It must be, under all the struggle, we want to go on. It must be deep down, we are creatures getting ready for when we are needed. It must be that waiting for that listening ear or the appreciative word, for the right woman or for the right man or the right moment just to be ourselves. We are getting ready, just to be ready, and nothing else. Like this moment, just before the guests arrive, working alone in the kitchen, sensing a deep down symmetry in every blessed thing, the way that everything, unbeknownst to us, is preparing to meet us too. Just on the other side of the door, someone is about to knock, and our life is just about to change. And finally, after all these years of rehearsing, behind the curtain, we might just be ready to go on. Let us sit in stillness for a minute. My sermon this morning is on time, and in that reading, it captures those moments just before something else happens. One of the readings in our gray hymnal that I return to often and that we've done here many times is the one by Kathleen McTeague. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edges of our lives and to resist that headlong tumble into that next moment until we can claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, and taking the time to look into one another's eyes and faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. And so we do. We come together because we need to remember to rest, especially after this last month, with all the activity and the plans and the projects and with the essentials of just everyday living. It's so difficult in this sped-up urban modern world to resist the pull to do that headlong tumble into the next moment. I think that we forget that our souls need a different kind of activity, a different kind of time. We've done so much in this past month as a community together, It's been an absolutely extraordinary, wonderful celebration honoring the beginnings of Beacon and the journey to get here. And you have done it.
Well.
You've done it with diligence, with dedication, creativity, and a lot of love. I need you to be proud of your accomplishment. It's a justified, necessary, and healthy thing to do. For if you don't breathe in that sense of pride, good pride, honest pride, worked for pride, ownership of your activities, of your work, if you don't breathe it in, you won't renew yourself. You won't be replenished. So I ask you in this moment, if you're comfortable, just to close your eyes just for a moment and breathe into your heart and through your heart and your mind. If you would say a silent thank you to the people that are next to you and the people that are behind you and the people in front of you. Send out your thanks for their work and their contributions to this beloved community. And send out a thank you to those who are here who have chosen to be here this morning with us. And now, would you take a moment and feel the gratitude coming back to you? Feel the people behind you, beside you, and in front of you thanking you for all that you have done. And allow as much of that gratitude and care and love in. Thank you for all you have done. And if you're comfortable, you can open your eyes now. May I suggest that this moment is the perfect moment. When our hearts and minds are open, aware, alert, alive. And this perfect moment is the only moment that we can know. This present moment is the only moment that we can enflesh, embody. We can only experience the past and the future in this present moment. It doesn't exist otherwise. It only exists as we think it, remember it, imagine it, in this present moment. And so, to me, we touch on a mystery of time. How can there be a past and a future if we can only experience the present moment? Is that even true? Now, I know that our minds can fill up with memory, and that some might say they live in the past, meaning that they fill the present moment up with thoughts of things that they have done and said that were. While others may say that they live in the future, filling their minds up with the might-bes and the plans and the words and the events that they hope or dread will happen. But what was is done. And what will be, it isn't yet. So if we can only be in the present moment, why is it such a challenge to do so? Why do the spiritual teachers of this age and many, many past ages continue to teach practices that help us to simply be in this present moment? Why is slowing down, if necessary, and becoming present, becoming aware, not the most obvious and natural thing to do? Why do we need reminders and practices and warnings like this? Perhaps we have a fear that if we surrender to this present moment and just be, nothing will get done. The world, it just might stop. And if we don't keep making those plans and our lists and remembering, Now, I'm serious. I think we have a fundamental fear that the world is going to stop. No, it's still going. We're still here. We're still here in this present moment together. So perhaps our fear of surrendering to this present moment, maybe it's unnecessary. It seems as if we might be able to trust that there is another moment coming. I have to confess, a very personal fascination with time and timelessness, and all the different types of time and realities that are there. There's linear time, the time that probably here in this room we are most familiar with. And it appears to have three parts to it. There's the past, the present, and the future. And it's depicted as a line, usually a straight line, that starts behind us, moves through us, and reaches out somewhere in front of us. Isaac Newton said that time is a fundamental measure and structure of reality. And most of us would fully accept this definition of reality. In fact, most of us would think that to imagine time in any other way is ludicrous. And yet, there are many different types of time and different structures of reality. The time and structure of reality that most of us have grown up with is based on the Christian worldview. God created the world at a certain point in time, and then came the creation of plants, and then animals, and then people, and then cultures that unfolded along this linear timeline, eventually leading to the end of time, some point in the future. Hopefully a very distant future. But that is only one story about time. Many cultures, ancient and modern, have a different story and a different experience of reality. In ancient cultures like the Mayan and the Inca, the Aboriginal cultures of North America like the Hopi, and in the traditions of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism, there is the idea that time is a wheel and that our lives are cyclical, moving from birth to death to rebirth. If one comes from a culture that is based on cyclical time, then this present moment will come again, there being multiple present moments. Out of these cultures that embrace a reality of cyclical time, there emerges the understanding that if time is cyclical, then life is also cyclical. To be reborn is to reincarnate into the world over and over and over and over again. With cyclical time, one gets many opportunities to experience multiple perspectives and thus to learn and grow from each of those perspectives. The Karuk indigenous tribe of California creates a cyclical reality that ends regularly. In their New Year rituals, they believe that the world, which is the same word that they use for cosmos, so their world or their cosmos ends at the end of the year and must be started up again, renewed. The world or the cosmos doesn't continue forward as it does with linear time. It ends and then begins again. For the Karuk, the future is only as long as the cycle of the seasons. Humans experience time differently and describe it differently. Time is straight or curved or circular. Time is a paradox to be used and experienced both objectively and subjectively. Although some would say that time is utterly subjective. We all have subjective experiences of time. Now, how many of you sat through a boring sermon, hopefully not one of mine, or a lecture, and experience time slowing down so that we experience time as if it's molasses? On the other hand, you probably all had the experience of having a wonderful experience going to a party or having a great conversation with someone where time just flew by. There seems to be also a phenomenon happening in the world right now, I don't know if it's touched you, where there is a sensation that time is speeding up. Now, whether that's empirically provable or not, it is being experienced by many people as speeding up. So those are just a few examples of our subjective experience of time. Now, in Greek mythology, there's two types of time. There's the Chronos and the Kairos. The first, Chronos, is sequential time, like the linear time, the type of time that we are all most familiar with. And perhaps we could even call it everyday time. And then there's Kairos time, also known as sacred time. To describe the moments that are Kairos, or of a unitive nature, spiritual, if you will, is difficult because partly our language is inadequate to the task, and partly the experience is literally beyond words. Now, I can remember one experience I had while on the island of Iona many, many years ago. I could tell you a lot about this island, off the west coast of Scotland. It's an island where Scottish kings are buried, Macbeth being one of them. An island nicknamed the Holy Island, because this is the place where the Irish monk St. Columba landed, bringing Christianity to England and Scotland. And it was also the island off the west coast of Scotland that was on the shipping route of the Vikings. And I could go on and on. The place has a lot of history. But on this day, I was simply sitting on a bench on the island, beside a walking path, simply sitting on a lovely, ordinary day. I wasn't waiting for something to happen. I wasn't intentionally contemplating the mysteries. I was just sitting. And a most profound stillness came over me, through me. Such a stillness that I felt outside of time, or so deeply in time, or so deeply under time. Maybe even I felt untouched by time. I felt this profound stillness. And within the experience of that penetrating stillness, I felt a connectedness to the island itself, the rock beneath me, the atmosphere around me, all history gathered and present in that stillness. This is Kairos time. Perhaps you too have experienced this time out of time. It often comes when we stop our regular activities, that headlong tumble into the next moment, I said before. Perhaps you were sick and bedridden for a long time. Or perhaps you were simply standing at the kitchen sink and staring out the window, breathing, not looking at anything in particular, when a shift of awareness happens. And rather than moving through time, you were in a time out of time, an extended present moment. Perhaps you had a feeling of deep calm come over you, or a sense that all was well in the world. This is Kairos time, sacred or unitive time. There's a quote in the book that we're using for the chalice circles called Heart to Heart. Those of you who are in one of these groups will be reading the chapter on spiritual experiences this month, this next month. And by the way, if anybody wants to join one of these circles, there's still space in them, and you can join at any time. In the fifth chapter, there's a quote by Gerald May describing Kairos time. He says, "In spontaneously occurring unitive experiences, one feels suddenly swept up by life, caught in a suspended moment where time seems to stand still, and awareness peaks in both of its dimensions, becoming at once totally wide awake and open. Everything in the immediate environment is experienced with awesome clarity, and the vast panorama of consciousness lies open. For the duration of the experience, which is usually not long, mental activity seems suspended. Preoccupations, misgivings, worries, and desires all seem to evaporate, leaving everything perfect as it is. Usually, there are reactive feelings that occur toward the end of the experience, feelings such as awe, wonder, expansiveness, freedom, warmth, love, and a sense of total truth or rightness. And after the experience is over, there is an almost invariable recollection of having been at one. End of quote. Perfect, just as it is. In this moment, right now, that we're sharing together, is simply perfect, just as it is. If you think this, and you feel this, it is so. Time is subjective, and so we can change our experience of it. We can pause ourselves on the edge of that headlong tumult into the next moment. And in that pause, trusting that the future will wait for us in for a moment or two, we simply breathe and welcome stillness. It's really very simple. In that pausing, we play with time. We can elongate it. We can blend past and future. We can dance with time because we are the creators of time. Our present is our future. Thus, in this moment, this perfect moment, we create our future. We are creating the future of this community, imagining the next 30 years in this moment. So let us imagine its expansion, its joyfulness, its relevance to us and the world that we are in. Let us imagine our own individual lives. From this moment, we create them. We can create joyful, relevant, free, relevant, free, loving, connected lives in this moment. May it be so.